This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
The dead don't speak, but their stories do. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring defense attorney and host of the podcast, Defense Diaries, Bob Mata.
The Delphi murder trial, it is, if it stays on track, just literally about a week and a half away. It's going to be very fascinating. The charges against Richard Allen, of course, that he killed the two little girls below the railroad track, but we can't talk about Odinism. We can't talk about any third-party suspects. We really can't talk about much of a defense in general for Richard Allen. So it's going to be an interesting case. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. You are going to be there on the ground reporting on this for us every single day. The latest that we've seen now, they're asking for the field trip. The defense is asking for the field trip out to the actual site of the murders by the railroad track. The prosecution saying, that's kind of dangerous over there. Maybe you shouldn't go. The Judge Gall has not ruled yet on it. I'm going to guess it's no if we're going to play along with how judge rules. Right. What's your expectations on this? Let's talk about the visit to the scene, first of all. How do you think that would benefit Richard Allen to take the jury to that place?
I think that it would be huge for Allen because the topography of that area, like you just can't. You can't really visualize it and have a true understanding of just how rugged that terrain is and how difficult it would be for one person to be able to kind of orchestrate this whole thing without some help. This whole down the hill thing, like it would be very instructive in particular for this jury, even like, and granted the crime scene's not going to look anything like it did at the time. The topography has changed, you know, since 2017. But in terms of just how the lay of the land looks and giving the jurors an idea of just exactly what would have had to have taken place in order for these crimes to have occurred the way that the state is saying that they did, is it gives the jury something that they could use, you know, and then ultimately that's what you're trying to weigh. You know, it's like McClellan's arguments that it's dangerous. All right, well, then don't have them do the treacherous shit.
Yeah.
Just bring them and have them come and look from a distance. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like cut the bullshit. I mean, she's probably going to deny it. She shouldn't. It's like it's been a part of our jurisprudence for a long time that if you can't bring the object into the courtroom, well, then you're allowed to bring the jury out to view the object. And, you know, in this case, the crime scene is very, very much a part of this case. It's an integral part of this case. And, you know, drone footage and photographs just do not do it justice in terms of what you're looking at. Yeah. It's like me, if I'm at, you know, the Bears game and I'm taking a picture from my seats, the field looks like it's 10,000 miles away. And that's mm-hmm. with an iPhone 15 Max that's supposed to have a great camera. You know what I mean? You just can't get the sense of distance and you know, size when you're looking at it through the lens of a camera. You can't tell. I think that it should be granted just because I think that it really will serve the jurors well to get out there and see where this all went down purportedly.
Well, it doesn't seem that serving the jurors well has been Judge Gull's goal in any of this case whatsoever. No. It seems very much, this is the narrative we're going with, and that's what we're going with, and I'm going to railroad you that way until it's done, and I can disappear, and you can get a retrial, and I can go off on a cruise. That kind of feels what it's been like.
And it feels exactly like that.
It's shocking. Knowing what we know about what they can argue, what they can't argue for a defense of Richard Allen, just a few days out now till this thing starts, what do you think they're... What are they going to argue as a defense for Richard Allen with Odinism being out, with the third party culprits being out, with basically anything that says it wasn't me, rather than saying just it wasn't me, they don't have a lot to go on.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to basically have to attack the timeline. You know, they're going to have to do what they can do in terms of attacking the timeline. And it, we've talked about it, you know, when I was in there for those three hearings, and I think that was in August. It's all starting to blur together now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it became evident that the medical examiner never took the body temperatures. Apparently, they didn't establish a time of death. You know, so there's just this assumption that the state's timeline is correct. And I can tell you from being a criminal defense attorney for an awful long time, I am absolutely positively attacking their timeline. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, prove that. Okay. You can prove what time the last phone call or, you know, Snapchat came from Libby's phone. But beyond that, you can't tell me when these girls were killed. It could have been any time from the time that they disappeared until they're discovered the next day, mm-hmm. you know, before noon. Like you have no way to prove, mm-hmm. you know, because that alibi can alibi your guy out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like this assumption that the murders took place because the state's saying they took place at 207. Well, that happens to fit because that's when Allen states that he was on the bridge. Uh-huh. That's super convenient for the state. So you attack the timeline like without mercy.
Yeah.
Like you just go at them over and over and over again in terms of just. Like, I mean, ultimately, they're going to have to really hammer away at the investigation or lack thereof, all this, you know, classic defense shit. But, you know, it's the kind of thing that defense attorneys do it for a reason.
Yeah,
because there is no such thing as a perfect investigation. They just don't exist because it's human beings that are doing them.
Sure.
And we all make mistakes, you know, and everything that wasn't done that should have been done that would have helped with this investigation is going to be pointed out. And then, you know, we'll see what they can come up with. Like, I mean, like she said that they can't say certain things in certain names. Well, you know, then you try to avoid saying those names and that thing, but you try getting in third party suspects in a different way, mm-hmm. you know? So they're going to have to try to work around it. Like, yeah. like she's made the ruling, you know, in my estimation, the two biggest problems for the defense are the first and foremost, the confessions. That's going to have to be dealt with. The real question that I have, the thing that I'm most fascinated to watch is how the defense is going to handle trying to mitigate those confessions. You know, we all kind of know what the basic theory is. And the theory is that Richard Allen, you know, because of the confinement conditions of him being held in a prison and, you know, segregation 23 hours a day, narrowly no human contact. And the guy lost his shit.
Yeah.
And all of these confessions, all of these things that he said, I don't care who they're to, his wife, his mom, you know, prison, like whoever's asking, because they're just going at him nonstop. Because their concept is that it's the conditions of his confinement are the interrogation. Mm-hmm. Because what you need to do to get rid of a confession in terms of filing a motion to suppress statements is that you have to show that they weren't voluntarily given, mm-hmm. and that they were given due to coercion.
Yeah.
Okay. And what they're saying here is this isn't the classic, we're shining a bright light in your face and, you know, starving you out for 48 hours and not letting you sleep until you crack. What we're doing is we're doing all of that over the course of 3 months by having you live like an animal, by having, you know, guards just continually harass you, continually abuse you, you know, mentally, you know, child killer, you know, who knows what they were feeding mm-hmm. them. You know, you've got like inmates that are sitting there as companions, suicide companions, who knows what they're saying to them. These are the worst of the worst. And when that was in Wabash, so you're talking about some hardened ass criminals that were sitting there as companions. And you know, they like, who knows what they were feeding them. Like, but the question becomes, how do they get that in at trial? And what is she going to allow them to get in mm-hmm. to try to mitigate the fact that he's saying these things,
yeah.
you know, and then it comes to the content, you know, what is said by Richard Allen? Is it things that only the killer would know, or is it something that could have been learned by his attorneys talking to him about the discovery and the crime scene? You know, like, how do you get that in? How do you get that in And then how do you mitigate it without putting Richard Allen on the stand if you need him to explain things? Because he's, I don't give a shit what pictures look like. I can tell you definitively that anybody who has been incarcerated for this period of time in solitary, he's still not right.
Yeah.
Like, never spoken a word to the man, but I can guarantee you he's not right. Mm-hmm. And like, he will not hold up. And like this, he's just been, it's just been like unbelievable confinement conditions. Like, the, yeah. like the, you just don't see. I mean, Murdoch, as much as an animal as that guy was, the shit that he did, he wasn't treated like this.
Mm-hmm.
You yeah. know, I mean, like he was in with Gen Pop,
yeah.
just hanging, waiting. You know, it's like it's a whole different thing. And when they break you psychologically, you know, and you're not getting the care that you need, you're going to stay broken. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, they're going to be sitting there with a broken client at trial mm-hmm. who was really, they're not going to have the option. Even if they wanted to put them on the stand, they're going to know there's no way we can put them on the stand. We don't know he may just start rambling mm-hmm. on the stand saying shit that
yeah.
is incoherent or, you know, inculpatory. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, it's like
yeah.
if you can't trust your client to be able to get up there and defend himself on the stand, then what are you going to do with them? You can't put them on, you know, but it's ultimately his choice, you know? So.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in. And then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.